This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, Binge Town homies? It's your girl, Kathleen, here with Jimmy, Kyle, and B-Tums. We're coming off a very high-stakes episode last week to talk about Season 7, Episode 14, titled A Sort of Homecoming. I want to start by giving a shout-out to my girl, our girl, everybody's girl, Jessica Harmon, on her directorial debut. And also to Drunk Nyla, because I love her so much and totally see myself in her. On this episode, we are back on Earth and in the Second Dawn bunker. And while there were some parts I love, there are also some parts that made me say, what the fuck is happening? And also, why? Jimmy,
Breach.
With the stats.
All right. Like always, at Bingetown TV Twitter, we had three options. What did you guys think of the episode? It was great. It was good. And blah. So it was great was 22%. It was good was 35%. And blah was 43%. So what do you guys think about that?
I mean, I can't 100% disagree with the community. Like Kathleen said, there were some things that made me think, like, what the hell is going on right now? It's just a little upsetting to see that the community is kind of agreeing that these last episodes are not top tier the 100 episodes, and that's a little bit upsetting to me. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I think we got some good reunions. We got a little nostalgic back in the bunker.
We did.
But yeah, I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, I was the one who made the poll, and blah, we'll get to it, was my feeling in the very beginning of the episode. And we'll probably have a little bit of back and forth with some of the hosts on that. But honestly, I would say I was more in between with the it was good and blah scenario, because blah was really only the beginning. The rest, I mean, I had some issues, but I was fine with it as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning was kind of like, in my notes, I have a lot of just like question marks. For like the beginning couple scenes, but as it moves forward, we get a really nice character interactions, some questionable decisions, questionable dialogue, but overall I'm in team. It was good. Thought it was good. Not blah.
Yeah. I'm totally on the it was good, not great, only because there were some blah moments, I would say.
Yeah.
I think that, Luke, who's not on the episode tonight, we talked about it before we watched it together. I think that there's just a lot of world building that they really focused on in the beginning of the season, which was so smart and written so well. And we're focusing on this time dilation and this and that, and we can't be on this planet or that planet. But now it just feels like they threw the book out the window and said, we're just going to go to Earth because that's Endgame.
Yeah, they're kind of just starting to really just skip to the end of some of these storylines. Yeah. I feel like there could have been a lot more meat. And yeah, like you said, they're just introducing kind of these new points where they spend so much time setting up the science of it in the beginning of this time dilation and how it works. And now there are some things where I'm like, well, where did these pills come from now? Like, how are they doing all these things? So, and I think we're going to get into all this in the episode. So are we ready to go?
Let's do it. Tags.
Let's do it. So obviously Clark is coming through the bridge fresh off of a Bellamy kill. And
very casual.
Yeah, she's coming through. she's coming through the bridge, and she is landing in the Second Dawn bunker on Earth. And there waiting for her are obviously Bill Cadogan and the rest of our heroes. You know, this is our bench crew, as we've been referring to them. Everybody who's left is more or less in this bunker on the actual Earth.
And Clark says it herself, and obviously we get to that in a second, but she breaks the helmet because she says everyone we care about is right here.
Which is a bullshit thing, I think. Yeah. That's one of the ones I said, okay, Clark, you're really fucking losing your mind if you think you can kill Bellamy and then just destroy the only tech they have on Earth right now. Like,
Good boy Murphy puts her in her place, though.
Good boy.
Yeah. So right when Clark goes through the bridge, like I said, Bill is there. And really quick, Bill gets the hell out of Dodge. He takes this, what did he refer
nano
to?
Nano tracking program.
Right. Yeah, the nano tracking program. It's he just takes a pill and he teleports back, assumedly to Bardo is where he is. Right. And this is one of the things right away. Where the hell are these pills coming from? There hasn't been a single mention of it. Like they very clearly in the beginning of the season laid out like the three definitive ways you can travel through the bridge, and nobody said shit about these pills, but apparently they have plenty of them.
It right. was biocode, knife tracker that you had to stab Tag deep them. Into them, and then the stone. Stone, of course. Yeah.
So I thought that was weird, and just like maybe halfway through the season they were just like, oh shit, we kind of need this easy way for Bill to teleport places, and they just kind of did it.
And he just had him on his person that whole time back in Sanctum. But Gaia's there. She has not aged.
Yeah,
she's exactly the same. She's been there for 3 days, she says. No one even knew she was fucking gone, which is hysterical. They're all like, hey, it's so good to see you. Like, what?
Yeah, let's take a little pause for that, because in a second, they go out onto to Earth to see that it's green, okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we were talking about this off pod, but there's a problem with that, because if Gaia's only been there for 3 days, then why is Earth back to normal? Why is the time dilation is not what we thought?
No.
No. It's been how what hundreds of years since they left Prime Faya and it traveled through the stars in cryosleep.
Yes, they were, but Monty specifically says it's going to take way longer than this. So we have to go to a different. That's why they went to Alpha, because they were like, Earth is not doable. Monty could have just turned them into cryosleep for 500 years and was like,
yeah. What I'm thinking, why, like, they were under no threat just what's the name? Circling around the
globe. Orbit.
Orbiting around the globe. Yeah. They could have just done that for infinity amount of years. Like, they were under no threat, right?
I mean, I agree with that.
Yeah. So
now it's got me questioning fucking everything.
But where's the drama in that? Where's the adventure?
Monty, it was made a point that Monty said, no way, we can't wait this out. We have to find another place. And now
Earth is not coming back, is what he said. Okay.
Not anytime in a maybe predictable future.
And I don't know if it's just we got everything wrong. Like, we always assumed that Earth's time dilation was in a way where that Bardo is slower. That's why you can be there longer and Earth time would pass similar to Penance.
I think Luke's our time dilation expert and he's not on it, but we don't have to stay on this for too long. I mean,
yeah, whatever.
I mean, it's fucked up is what it is, but we're just going to have to take it at face value for what the 100 writers are doing.
Yep. Back on Earth, Gaia hasn't aged. Everybody's here. Everybody's happy for now. And
are they?
No, they're actually not. That was a horrible choice of words. Moving on to this scene where we're outside. Everybody goes out. They're like, wow, it's so green. They're all in awe of how Earth is survivable again. And Clark drops the bomb. She's like teary-eyed. She looks straight at Octavia and Echo, and she just breaks down. She says, I tried everything, guys. Like, seriously, I did. You don't know how much I didn't want to do it. And she's just like, Bellamy's dead.
Where's Bellamy? He's dead.
Yep.
And I did it. You know, and I tried everything. I mean, I guess in the seconds that she had before the bridge closed, she tried everything, but sounds is kind of bullshit to me.
Yeah.
So we already vented about our frustrations with Bellamy's, the end of his character arc as a whole. So I want to focus on how these other characters are reacting to it. How did we think about how Clark handled the situation? Did we like how she showed a little bit of vulnerability and just broke down in tears? Did we like that Octavia and Echo accepted what she did and her decision? Like, how are we feeling here?
So my original, I always want everyone to forgive Clark. And let me just preface this by saying this is the first episode that I did not feel love for Clark. It's the first time in 7 seasons, and I don't care if she blows up Mount Weather. I don't care if she, in season 5, when she's turning on Bellamy, I always kind of understand where she's coming from. And I think that this episode, I wasn't on last episode, I didn't get to talk about the Bellamy stuff. I think by the end of this episode, you kind of look back at it and you say, all of this was for nothing.
Yep.
Character deaths. For nothing. I am glad that Echo and Octavia didn't turn on her, because Clark is like my favorite character. But I think it's out of character for them to not turn on her. So it's like my what I want and what should be is kind of battling each other in my head.
I kind of accept it because Echo and Octavia, not only did they like just get a quick view of Bellamy and his fully decked out disciple robes and stuff, like they got to interact with him for an extended period of time. Like I think they were able to understand that he was completely team disciple and that he wasn't coming back. So I think that helped them accept it. And I was okay with them like understanding what she had to do. I didn't want Echo to freak out like she did last time. I didn't want Octavia to get like really, really mad at Clark because we don't have time for that shit. I think they saw what Bellamy had become and they're smart enough to understand it. Like if it was Bellamy as a disciple or Maddie's life, they can rationalize why she killed Bellamy and chose to do what she did. And I was okay with them accepting her choice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar, but then total opposite in a way, just because similar, we all talked about this last episode. They had to accept. You're totally right. There is no time for them to get pissed at Clark.
Yeah.
We all wanted them to accept just because we were written right into that box.
No time because there's 3 episodes left or no time?
2 episodes left.
No, but I'm like thinking about it in like a writer's way or their character's way. Like no time. What do you mean? There's all the time in the world. They're 25 years old. And
no,
they,
no.
They
for us, us, there's no time. And to be completely honest, I just think it was written awfully because I think that Octavia saying, I understand and hugging Clark is ridiculous because we're talking about the same Octavia that had Pike and Bellamy on the same side where her love of her life, Lincoln, died because of pretty much Bellamy. And even though she hated him, she still would not want him to die and she would not let him die. She beat the shit out of him. And we're talking about Blood Raina, who was ridiculous, who was you're one crew or you're the enemy of one crew. And when Bellamy came back, all he did was defy her. She sent him to the pits, but still the whole entire time was trying to save his life. And she was just a one-track mind as Blood Raina, but she's still at that point. I just can't see how she was just, okay, I understand, give you a hug. I mean, Clark and her never even really got along ever. They don't give each other hugs.
So I think, in fairness, you have to finish the quote. Octavia said, I understand, and so would the old Bellamy. The Bellamy that was, like, willing to die and, like, sacrifice everything for his friends. And I kind of liked how she brought up the old Bellamy. Because he probably would understand that. He was Team Clark. He knew these impossible decisions. That's just me. Am I fighting too hard for this? Were you guys completely not liking this Octavia Echo scene?
I just think that it was awkward. It just didn't feel like they were like mourning Bellamy, like one of the, like what probably the second most important character in the show's death. I guess I understand. At first, I was pissed that she says I understand and the things about Bellamy because I'm like, this is very out of character. But looking back, when she says the old Bellamy who would have done anything for his little sister, I guess she's saying how like Clark did whatever it took for Maddie, which I guess the parallel's there for that. But I'm more upset about Echo's reaction. Because she goes, we lost him a long time ago. But in reality, it's been like
24 hours.
If that. Like, how long has it been since he came back in the white robe and they were on Bardo?
I mean, he's done way worse in front of Octavia and Echo. I mean, not necessarily Echo because she wasn't around with Bellamy for the Pike thing. But Octavia's seen him do worse on the Pike side and forgiven him. And all Octavia saw was one time he says, Clark, you're coming with me. You're doing the MCAP. One time he gives up Clark and them for the flame, saying like she doesn't have the flame. And then they sent them to Earth. That's it. Like, literally, that's it. Nothing bad. And it's 2 seconds.
It's insane.
I know it's 2 seconds
it's
for
really
us.
Insane.
But
when you really get down to it, you can't think about it too much. You're going to start hating it.
Because Echo's quote, it's just like so unbelievable to me.
Starting to hate it.
I literally, like, bleh came out of my mouth to our group chat. We have a group chat for this podcast. Bleh came out of my mouth as soon as that happened, and they weren't even watching. Some of them weren't even able to watch at the time, so I was trying not to spoil anything. And then, of course, the Twitter poll, I was like, bleh, because that's exactly how I felt at that moment.
I mean, it's not going to get any better. So
I really want to read Echo's full quote because it makes, like, sense on its face, but like why the way she's using it doesn't. Because she says, we lost him a long time ago. He needed all this chaos to make sense, all this violence, all the people we've killed. He couldn't accept it's all meaningless, which, hell yeah, straight on, makes love a ton that. Of sense. Mm-hmm. And she goes, Kadokan gave him meaning, and that meaning is what killed him, not you. What?
I really liked that. Was the only thing that saved the echo reaction for me. I really liked that quote, and I agree with it completely. I think Bellamy, I mean, they all had to deal with killing so much, and that's kind of like the Monty point of view, that like, what is all this killing about? It's all meaningless. What does this matter? I wish they kind of built Bellamy up to that a little bit more, but I liked that quote from Echo, actually.
Well, I like it because it seems like she's agreeing with him, like trying to find a better way, and then it's just immediately accepting that like, he's dead now because of it.
I mean, to Echo too, it's like, Clark did this for Maddie. We don't even necessarily know what she was saving world-wise. Like, you know, the point is that she was doing this because she didn't want Maddie to get hurt. Echo should be like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. I literally wrote after this, like, after Echo says that quote and Octavia and Clark have the moment, I wrote, like, I kind of want Bellamy to be right now.
Of all the levers that she's pulled, usually it has to do with more than one person being saved. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem that I have.
I think it's even more so that, like, do we care about Maddie?
I mean, not at the expense of Bellamy.
I know.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to wrap up this discussion because I feel like we're just going to keep shit talking this scene for a while if we don't wrap it up, by saying that we knew this wasn't going to be the season that we wanted when kind of the stuff with Bob came out. And, you know, it's just kind of frustrating. Because I would say the first half of this season was very, very, very strong.
I would say the first three quarters of it.
Yeah, and now as we're getting to the home stretch, we're just kind of realizing that it might not have the juice without Bellamy at 100% and without Clark being all in. And it's just like, I have this really weird feeling because there's like probably more than 50% of the elements of this season that I really, really, really enjoyed. And they built out up characters like J.R. Bournes. Oh my gosh, I can't talk. J.R. Bournes, Russ Hayter, that I really liked. But without our guys like Bellamy and Clark, it's just tough to bring it home. And that's what I'm dealing with right now.
Yeah, I mean, our two top characters are handicapped. They're kneecapped. Like, they're just not who we thought. I mean, kind of not who we thought they were. They're worse off now than they were at the beginning of the season. They're worse off now than they were at like the end of season two, like during season three, all the shit that happens between season four and five. Like we're at the end of the show and they're in the worst place possible, which is not fun.
And I have one more thing I want to go back to and then I'm done. But I thought the whole point of season five, the finale, the end of it, when Maddie goes against Clark and says, Lexa wouldn't want you to do this. Clark is the bad guy, quote unquote, because she's sandbagging everybody only for Maddie. Then Maddie defies her so that she can save everyone else. So she's saying, don't go. And she's saying it this whole episode, too. I'm not worth everybody else. It's the same exact problem just two seasons later. And she does. And the whole point was also Maddie's pissed her two seasons ago for leaving Bellamy, too, to die.
Yeah, that just makes
same
me sad.
Thing.
I'm going to get us off this by saying, Richard Harmon, that tier was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that was
That Murphy tier was fantastic. And that's
it was nice to see the squad together again.
Yeah.
Opening title.
But wait, okay. Without that, we skipped a whole thing that I liked. It was Gaia kind of explains what happened. So she got kicked into the anomaly. They say when you're caught in a closing bridge, it defaults to your planetary DNA, which is really interesting because it's like, why? How the fuck did she end up in a turned off planet? And I just love this line. He goes, the guy she's fighting who never stood a chance, said, for all mankind. And she said, I'm no man, and fucking sliced him up.
That was straight out of the third Lord of the Rings when the chick is fighting the ring.
Yeah.
Just says, takes off the thing, I am no man, and stabs him right in the face. Spoiler alert for Lord of the Rings, but it's been
and we got a cute Jackson and Miller reunion, which I loved.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna cause any problems with this, but the funny thing is just how everyone was trying to figure out who was in the suit and it ends up being no one.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever. Like, I don't really care, but it's
he had no role to play now that we know what Gaia's plans were. Are we good to move on now?
Back to the bunker.
So Raven puts on the helmet. They're looking for the stone, because they want a way back to Sanctum to get all their other people. Raven says that the stone is 100 feet straight down and that they gave them...
fake helmets.
Yeah, other people had fake helmets. But
not
the
fake, but less techie.
The Bardowans gave them faulty helmets that couldn't locate the stone because obviously the Bardowans did not want them escaping from Earth. So Raven locates it with her helmet, which is a good helmet. And then Clark kind of... Is there anything in between, or does Clark just yeet it against the wall?
Yep, she just goes, hey, can I see that?
I said, my note is, why isn't everyone beating up Clark? Yeah, I'm sick everybody... of these fucking decisions she's making. I'm sick of them.
Well, this decision was just like, okay, you can make that decision without destroying the helmet. Like, you don't have to burn the ships here and, like, make it impossible to ever change your mind again, which, coincidentally, she does less than 10 hours later.
She acted
so petty when she looked at Murphy and she was just like, all right, turns out you were right, Murphy. Maybe I shouldn't have destroyed our only means of escape from this planet. I'm like, yeah, of course it was, Clark, you idiot.
Yeah,
she's pissing me off and I love her to death. She's my girl.
Pissing
and she
me
is
off
pissing
in
me
the
off.
Third to last episode of the series. Yeah. This is not where
it's
we
the
should
only
be.
Tech they had. She's losing her mind.
Can you imagine that she's literally like, she kills your boy. Now you're the people on the bunker. She kills her boy, Bellamy. And then she smashes the helmet because she doesn't want anybody else to die. When it's her fault that Bellamy's dead.
Yeah, like, you're the one killing people, motherfucker. Yeah.
I love when Richard's like, oh, now you want to go to see the stone. Like, it's so classic.
There's a little thing I wanted to mention because Gabriel has, I guess, now a sad line where he's like, I mean, it's sad in the moment, too, because he's like, oh, yeah, we can go back and, like, get my people. And Murphy kind of looks at him and then just doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you almost forget that he has his own people.
Yeah.
I almost forgot that he no longer has his own people.
Yeah.
Is what
They're gone. They're gone. Anyway,
so that's really the only thing that happens in this scene. Their helmet is now destroyed. They don't know where the stone is or how to input the code if they had the stone. So moving on, we have a scene between two characters that I have been waiting to sit down and talk in J.R. Bourne's Russ Hader and Bill Cadogan.
Cadogan.
Billy Cadogan. Cadogan.
Billy Cadogan. What the fuck was that?
Okay, I gotcha.
It's Big Daddy Caddy.
Big Daddy Caddy.
She corrected you. You looked her dead in the eye and mispronounced it.
That's how I roll. I doubled down on my mistakes. Look like an asshole.
And then you had me questioning it. I'm like, oh, wait.
Well, that's because,
I'll do that.
Yeah,
that's because
we always
Lucas
had it wrong.
Was theorizing early in the season before we heard it too often. He was saying Cadogan.
Yeah, so they're in MCAP, Shane Hata, our boy, which I have in all caps. J.R. Bourne is so fucking hot, LOL.
I literally.
Dude, you're so whack.
He's so skinny, but hot.
I'm live tweeting, and I just said weekly J.R. Bourne is the shit.
But hot tweet. As well.
Yeah. It's the truth. He is the shit.
He is.
He's awesome. So in this, we find out that Bill's man obviously saved Russ Hader from death in Sanctum, took him back to Bardo and healed him up with their technology. Bill is flipping through the sketchbook as Russ Hader is kind of like coming to. And Russ just says, I know who drew it. And that's all that Bill's looking for. That's all Bill needs.
I like Callie in the drawings, like very vivid Callie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cornrows on one side, like beautiful, gorgeous Maddie drawing. It's really good. And I like that Maddie draws too, like Clark does.
Yeah.
We want the prequel.
Yeah, we need the prequel.
Honestly, at this point though, do we want it?
No.
Yeah, what we want is the Josephine spinoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian's trying to save himself.
No. I've actually been pondering it, and if it were to be a Josephine spinoff, it would be a sitcom, but like a dark comedy called The Lightborns, and it would be a sitcom of the Primes, like doing their shit on Sanctum.
Yeah, she has you shook.
I'd watch
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she does.
Jump
I just
on
had
Joe
her,
Juice.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, Russell wants some assurances if he's going to be helping Bill. He says, Sanctum is mine. First off, Sanctum is mine. And we destroy the stone that's there so that you guys can never come back. And Bill kind of laughs and says, well, the stones are indestructible and you're an idiot, but, you know, fine, you can have Sanctum, whatever, but it's going to be irrelevant in the end when we fight the last war. To which Russell responds, I want no part of the last war. And he says, one planet will be fine. Thank you very much. Really like that line. And they just kind of go back and forth. Bill describes to him what this last war is going to entail. And he says, you don't really have a choice. If we win it, then you're going to win it too and transcend. And if we don't, then everybody dies. You don't get a choice. And Russ Ada is just kind of like laughing and making fun of him. Like, you can tell that Russ thinks this is all bullshit.
I want transcend or die on a t-shirt. He's like, as good as that sounds, transcend or die, whatever. I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'll have that on my tombstone as well. Tombstone, t-shirt, hat. I'll take it all.
I'm just wondering why our boy Levitt isn't in the background, Doran. It looks like he's getting ready to get M-capped. Come on, have our boy just stand there in the background.
He'll be in the next episode.
Sure, yeah. Budget reasons.
Shout out, Jason. Hope we talk to you soon.
That what beautiful day? Face doesn't come cheap. Mm. I just want to make a comment about, so like B-Tom said, we've been kind of anticipating this meeting and this like eventual conversation for so long. And these two people are at, you know, the heads of their groups, you know, they're these authoritarian tyrants that are kind of just molded this cult of personality around themselves. And it's just so funny seeing them interact, because what their goals are just is so reflected in their personalities. How Bill is like, I have a higher purpose. Like, none of this means anything. He's always calm, cool, collected. And Shade Hate is like, I like tyranny. Like, I want to control everything. I want to rule. And it's just funny how like that comes out so much in their personalities, especially when they talk to each other.
I think the key here is that Cadogan is really underestimating Shade Hada here. Like, Cadogan thinks Shade Hada is a fucking
savage.
Yeah. Like a feral. Savage, yeah, literally. Yeah. And Shade Hada is just manipulating him right back. Yeah. It's two very high powered minds just working each other in their own ways, which are different, but still like, oh, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Russell tells Bill that Maddie was the one that drew in the sketchbook. And then he says, I know exactly what you're going to do. You're going to send a strike team. Clark's going to fight back. Maddie's going to be part of the fight. And then she's going to die. And you'll have nothing from all of this. What you should do is send me to Earth. I'll get her back for you. And Bill's interested in this proposal. He is definitely interested, because I think he identifies Russell as a man who gets stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of forget, was Russell at the end there kind of showing a little bit of sympathy to the cause? Because he says transcend or die isn't really a choice. So he leads Bill to believe that he's kind of following along.
Yeah, he's playing him. We find out later he wants the reign. He doesn't want to transcend. Yeah. But he's playing him with that. All right, so now we're back at the bunker, and we have our boys Miller and Jackson doing
love
their thing.
Boys.
It cracks me up just because, after having Sachin on the podcast, and he explains how like Miller and him are being boys and being bros, kissing isn't weird at all. But saying like the stuff like baby and like, you know,
I noticed it in their initial meeting when Jackson was just like, baby, it's so nice to see you.
Yeah. And so that just cracked me up. But we love our boys getting back together finally.
So Miller's really distraught about Bellamy's death, because he had said earlier that he was going to try and forgive Bellamy for everything that he's done, because Bellamy forgave him wholeheartedly for all of the atrocities he helped commit in the bunker back in the Blood Reyna's reign.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets into this whole thing where, you know, would my father even like accept me after these things? I don't think he would. And then our boy Jackson has this great line. Your father wanted you to live. That's why he gave up his spot in the bunker. And you have. You are. Clark's right. Everyone we care about that's left is here. We thought Sanctum was our second chance. I think this is.
It's
Jackson's
nice.
All in on Earth.
I like
2.0.
It.
It's some sexy and emotional pillow talk. I'm here for it.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, candle lit. It was nice.
Yeah.
But the only issue I have with it is that we needed more Miller this season for this scene to really hit hard.
Yeah.
And we've just kind of missed Miller.
So next we get Nyla's rec room. And I love this because I loved all the Nyla stuff this episode, especially because Jessica Harmon was directing. She tweeted a part later when it's the Echo and Nyla scene. She tweeted something like, did I give myself this close up? Hell yeah, I did. It's so funny. And I think she's so great. So we get to the rec room. There's a piano and we get that Gabriel like, I used to tickle the ivory lines. Nyla gets to the hidden booze and says something like, there were so many rules when we used to live here and whatever. But I just want to say, like, you really got to think about the implications of coming back to this bunker where all this tragic stuff happened. I mean, when you get the Octavia scene, it's relevant, mm-hmm. but the fact that Nyla gets so fucked up, it's like, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be back here either. Like, yeah. I would be that blacked out as well. So it's, who is it? It's her, Indra, Miller,
Jordan
Jackson.
And Hope.
No. I'm just talking from all the people bunker. From the bunker.
Dark year. Yeah.
So it's just Miller, Jackson, Indra, Nyla, and Octavia are the only five.
Yeah.
So like coming back to this, everyone else is like, and oh Gaia. Yeah, the bunker. But these five are probably like, ugh. Like get the abs like we ate humans here.
It literally looks exactly the same.
Yeah,
it's gotta be PTSD.
Because there's no time dilation.
Yeah.
But well, Earth grew, it's fine.
Okay. Oh man.
Anyway, but I do like the scene where they get the bottle of wine that or whatever it is.
It's Monty's recipe.
Monty's special sauce.
Is it safe? It was never safe.
Yeah.
I love it. It's just
it
so
might
funny.
Put you in a coma, but
Nyla killed it this episode. She just got fucked up and like kinda like sauntered around, like just kind of bopping around to everybody.
She was like drunk Gandhi, just like giving advice.
She gave some sage wisdom to Echo in a time of need while she was blackout drunk.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jimmy's tweet, you gotta acknowledge Jimmy's tweet on the Binge Town account that said, my dad made it. Epic pickup line. Jordan.
Such a good pickup line from Jordan to Hope, dude.
You want some? My dad made it.
Yeah, she's like, nah, I don't think I should have any. My dad made it. Aw.
Anytime you mention Monty, that's such low-hanging fruit to get points.
Yeah. And Jordan, we love it.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We love our Monty. But I think that's good for that scene. Our next scene.
I just want to just mention that Echo turns down some of the special juice.
Turns down.
And, yes. Yeah, turned down. And she dips. And Gabriel's like, I'll go with her, like, go after her. And then Nyla steps in and is like, she needs to be alone. And at first I was like, that's so weird that Gabriel would do that. And then I'm like, oh, wait, never mind. They spent 5 years on, you know, Skyring beta penance together. So it does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it is crazy. Flash forward a little bit when Indra and Octavia talk. It is unbelievable to think that Indra is like, I saw you 3 days ago. And Octavia's like, I haven't seen you in 10 years.
I forgot.
Yeah.
I forgot. Yeah. And that's one of my favorite scenes, which we'll get to, because those two are, you forget how close and the heart of the show that both of those are.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, baby.
So next scene then is Maddie and Clark, and they have their first sit-down talk, it feels like, in a while. And Maddie just says, you decided for me again, in reference to shooting Bellamy. She says, I never asked for you to kill Bellamy so that I would be protected. I'm tired of, you know, people dying for me. And Clark says, yeah, I decided for everyone. That's what I'd do.
I took that. I wrote villain for that. I just think that's a villain line at this point.
About Clark?
Yeah. So with Clark saying that, we've been talking about this for 7 seasons. She does make those decisions. But for some reason, this is the first time where she's saying it. And in the way she said it to Maddie, I was like, seems like a villain to me.
100%.
It reminded me of like all the one, like initially, I guess that's what, season 3 after Mount Weather, when everyone's like afraid of her and talking all that shit behind her back, basically.
Commander of death.
And this is her like leaning into that personality. Yeah. Like 4 seasons later. And it's like, why?
I read that completely differently. I thought it was someone who is just like tired of it all. And like, that has been a role. Like, it's not a secret. She does make all the decisions for everybody, and the consequences are all on her back. And didn't we acknowledge that a couple episodes ago?
Yeah, but I would say that 99% of the time, I fully agreed with she was doing it for the greater good. She was doing it for X amount of people. This one was fully for Maddie, and even Maddie herself was like,
"Yeah,
bro, I didn't ask for this. Like, now you have to live with it. I don't want that for you. I don't want that for anybody here.
I mean, going back to the season 5 tangent, they played her off like the bad guy besides Blarine, obviously, and the actual bad guys. They played her off as the person who was wrong in that scenario where she sandbagged everybody for Maddie. So this is another exact scenario and she's saying, I'm making this choice.
But to be fair, and I agree in season 5 that I was like, okay, I don't necessarily want you to do all these things, but I understand because she was fully with Maddie for 6 years straight by herself. And it's like these people come in, but she's like, I got to protect this little girl. She is everything to me now. She's my daughter.
Yeah.
This season, it's like, where are the stakes? Yeah. I don't know. They're not, I can't see them.
Maddie storms out in a very teenager-esque way saying, you ruined my life just like you ruined your own. And then she's out.
I like that.
Preach, though. She's telling the truth.
Yeah.
Clark says you can't wander off alone in this place. It's huge in the dark. And then the lights come on, right?
Don't follow me.
Cue the 3 best characters ever. Raven gets those lights on and Murphy goes, my girl, or Morgan goes, my girl. I love that. So good.
With Murphy's whole situation in this scene, I said, he's the new main protagonist, man. He's such a good guy.
He's the new favorite character. And he was always a favorite character, but I think he's just widening the gap between one and the next best.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, I think that the way that they split up these seasons, or this season with the factions and everything, Murphy is the hero of the Sanctum storyline. So he became Clark and Bellamy status from this season, which is awesome.
He has that character development that, as a fan of a show that's been going on for 7 seasons, that you're just dying for. I mean, he has it all for a character that in the last season, with 2 episodes left, that you are still in love with, because we've been on this journey with him and we've seen him change after all that's happened to him. And we used to get that from our other characters, but Clark, like we've been saying, is kind of in the same position she's been in before already, a couple seasons back.
It's funny, I'm watching season 2 and Murphy just met Amori. Literally, I just saw the scene and it was... These characters are just so different than when we first met them. And you're right, Kyle. It's very rewarding because the Murphy character arc, they are hitting that one out of the park. And this has been one of his strongest seasons, probably because this is the only one where he's a legit hero type. And we love seeing him feel it like that. Yeah,
it's amazing. Right. Him and Amori. Amori, the fucking development for Amori is unbelievable.
That's honestly an even bigger feat, because Amori doesn't get that much screen time at all, but she ends up being this cast out freak Draina that is like a thief and kind of bad. She's even manipulating Murphy at some point when they're back in the early days. And now she's bench crew. She's a great person. She's best friend. She's family. She's a better person. She's learned all these skills. She's smart.
She cares for other people too. Remember when a big plot point in the early goings of the seasons was her assuming the role of a prime and helping connect the children of Gabriel with their lost parents. She didn't have to do that. Amori's been great. So has Murphy. So has Raven. And like you said, these are our 3 best characters right now. And Murphy immediately says, going with this hero archetype, now we find the stone. And Raven says, I'm not a miracle worker. I can't fix this helmet. That's crazy technology. And Murphy says, we can't leave all those people on Sanctum. Earth is their home too. Hatch and his buddies, and we're going to name them. His buddies were X, Y, and Z.
Hell yeah.
When you let Hatch and his buddies die, was that just to save your friends? And Raven's like, shit, nah, I saved everybody, not just my friends.
Damn, I can't believe Murphy's talking me into being a good person.
Right?
6 years of watching Bellamy manipulate her on the ring. Damn.
Yeah, that was great. He catches himself. He's like, Bellamy. Amori says, I miss him too. I miss him too.
Love it when they reference the ring. I want flashbacks from the ring. I want a series from the ring.
They could do a show up there.
Order that straight to series, baby. I'll take it.
That could be another sitcom.
Sitcom? I can't.
I just thought it was. I thought it was weird wording.
What about it was weird wording?
I just like Bellamy manipulating Raven while they were on the ring. Like that Bellamy at that point in the story, was he a manipulator?
No, I think he thought it was weird. I wouldn't even say Murphy was manipulating Raven in that moment. I just think he knows what to say to motivate her. I agree that maybe the wording should have been motivate versus
Yeah, that was the only, it just manipulate felt weird because it felt like he was almost villainizing Bellamy. He obviously was not.
No.
This one was great. Yeah, Octavian, Indra, 2 people that have been with us for a very long time. And this is a relationship that is just amazing. I just watched, I'm going to bring it up again. I'm on season 2. Octavia just became Indra's 2nd. They go way back and it has been, Octavia has grown from a 25-year-old to a 35-year-old. They haven't seen each other in 10 years. Octavia is an adult now. And have we gotten them having a conversation at all this season, a long one, just the 2 of them?
No,
literally no. This is the first time they're seeing each other.
This was rewarding because this is Indra confronting her in a position where Octavia is 1, having to deal with her blood Reyna past, and 2, her brother dying. And Indra is just the person that's there, and it makes so much sense that she is the one there comforting her and getting her through it in a way that only Indra can.
This is where this episode shines. The scenes that are like this are why it was good, not bleh, because this was fucking incredible. When she's given him, Bellamy, she's given him a grounder prayer, right? Yeah, a tree crew prayer.
May the earth and the ash become one, body and spirit, old life and new. From the earth we will grow, from the ashes we will rise. And then we get Indra saying, did Lincoln teach you that?
She's bang. You that is that only fucking season 7 shit we want to hear.
That, but you weren't my only teacher. And Indra saying, sure, but I was the best, which is the amazing. Octavia, so true.
Octavia cracks a smile too, a very fleeting smile. But
this season makes you almost forget about these two, which is, I can't believe it. Like when they first mentioned that it's been 10 years since they've seen each other, for at least Octavia's side, I'm like, these two are the heart of the show. Really? Like they had a bond that
makes you forget about the relationship between the two. Indra has shined this season and Octavia has the relationship. Shined separately.
Oh my God. Okay, how could I ever forget about either? But just together in a way that's like meaningful. And Octavia is Indra's daughter.
Yeah.
Basically.
More or less. Pretty much says it in the next scene.
Exactly. I love that she's struggling with being Blood Reyna and being back in the bunker, and Indra's wondering why she hasn't made peace with it in 10 years. So she's basically like, your penance is my penance. I'm going to chill with you here, blah, blah, blah. But then this is the line that really hits with these two, which she's like, we're equally guilty about what happened down there. We are all Blood Reyna.
Yep.
I love that. We are all Blood Reyna because in this episode, we see several people dealing with these same emotions in Indra, Octavia, Miller, and Jackson. Like, all of them are dealing with kind of the same emotions because they all had to go through it. We are all Blood Reyna. Everybody who was in that hatch. Great line. Love it so much.
Yeah. The little note I wrote was we need a coping sesh in Nyla's rec room with Indra, Jackson, Miller, and Nyla. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they need to pass that bottle around and just let it out.
I would love that. Wow. Truly. That'd be hot.
I would like to watch any mix of these characters just get drunk and talk to each other. Yeah. The stories they could swap.
This is the type of shit that we want at the end of the last season of the fucking show.
It's the Game of Thrones.
I was just going to say, I don't want to do
Night
it.
Night of the Seven Kingdoms?
Yeah that episode. I was going to say it. That was the last episode before I realized shit was really hitting the fan. Like, that was a good episode when they were all like drinking together, talking before the big fight.
Like
big
when she gets knighted, Brienne gets knighted and everything. Yeah. But then we get that good Kane fucking flashback. They get back into the bunker. Indra hypes her up enough to get her back. And we get this quick little montage of Bellamy rescuing them. We get Kane's like old face, this beautiful Kane face that I've missed so much. I didn't realize I miss Kane so much.
Kane's great.
I love him. He was the dad of the group. He was the dad that everyone wanted Jaha to be, but you couldn't even like Jaha. So annoying.
I hate Jaha.
Do we all hate Jaha?
By the end,
By the end.
Okay, he makes it hard.
I haven't gotten
to season 3 yet.
He goes till 5. He gets worse all the way into 5, right?
I mean, how could he ever come back after the Alley stuff?
I mean,
yeah, that's pretty much that's a pretty steep climb back to not even normalcy, but like just someone looking at you not a fucking asshole.
I would argue that he gets worse after Alley in the bunker part.
They literally named it Camp Jaha, and then we're like, we're not naming it this anymore. That's how much he sucks.
Arcadia.
Yeah,
now.
Like we're like, it's not called Camp Jaha anymore. Yeah. Fuck him.
But so when Octavia and Indra come back into the, what's the room called? The Rotundum.
Yeah,
the Rotundum. So Indra and Gaia kind of finally have this reconciliation. And I think you mentioned it before where Gaia apologizes, says, I know I was never the warrior that you wanted. I'm sorry I couldn't be that for you. And Indra finally gives her something and says, I'm the one who's sorry. You're my Seda. Yeah. It was a good moment. Sweet. Like, I wanted Gaia and Indra to have a better relationship than they did. Yeah. And I'm glad that they are reconciling before the end.
That definitely needed to happen.
It had.
Oh, yeah. The fire, absolutely fire scene. And like, I'm going to keep saying it. I've said it before. This is the content we want with 2 episodes left.
Absolutely.
These two are cast so well. They're such badass women. Just like fucking perfect. I love them. So again, like you just said, I wish we had more scenes with them because I think they're cast perfect as mother and daughter.
Yeah, I was a little upset that not even scenes with Indra and Gaia in the same spot, but they kind of just like shoved Gaia on Earth and we didn't see her for a bunch of episodes, which there was plenty going on besides that. But I would have liked for Gaia to be involved in it, mainly with the Maddie storyline, because I feel like when Guy's around, she lifts Maddie's character up a little bit. They definitely play off of each other well. So
I mean, even Maddie, I liked the reunion between Maddie and Gaia in the very beginning when she's like, Santa, like, she's like, how are you here? Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, somebody is happy to see Gaia because everyone's like, oh, Gaia, wait, you weren't with them? You weren't?
Yeah.
Where? Yep. Oh, she was like, no, I was with Chilling Avengers of Sabrina. I was on the other lot.
Yeah. Just think about it. 13 episodes ago, we were like, Gaia and Clark gonna bang? Yeah. And now it's like, oh, wait. We haven't seen
it. Still could. I'm telling you, in episode 16, we're going to get a flash forward and Clark is going to be with somebody. And who is that going to be?
We don't know who's going to be banging who, except we know Indra's going to be banging Russ Ada. That's all we know. 100%.
It ain't Bellark, baby.
There's going to be.
Confirmed. Finally. Confirmed.
Humans are all destroyed at the end of this series.
Yeah.
Hot take coming in from
they're Game not destroyed, bro. They're beings of light.
Anyway, arguably the bigger point of this scene is the bridge opens and nobody comes through, but somebody came through. He's just wearing an invisible suit and it's our friend, Russ Hayda.
I'm just going to say this really quick, okay? So we have Indra, Gaia, and Octavia sitting there, right? Yeah. And Octavia just spent however long she just spent on Bardo with the disciples, knowing that they have suits that go invisible. And of all three of them, she goes, oh my God, why didn't no one come out of that? God, are you kidding
Trash.
Me? You don't realize they're invisible.
It's really bad.
And then
Indra was the one that recognized.
And then Indra says, I feel something. Okay, now you say you feel something. So the three of you just stand there. Octavia leaves the room. The two are like, just in case someone comes back, we'll stand here and wait. No one's taking any swipes at invisible people. No one's saying, holy shit, we got to tell everyone in the world that there's invisible people walking around.
Which, if they did the camera shots, they probably took the liberty with the camera shots, but the way they filmed it made it look like he was 2 feet away from them and at all times. And if they just did like a slash 180, would have wrecked them.
Literally, like Octavia at one point almost bumps into him, and I'm like, oh my God.
I get that we're supposed to be the good guys, but why is Indra not letting that P90 rip through the bridge once it opens? Why even let people come through?
Yeah.
I said the same thing while we were watching Kai.
Why not pop some warning shots through that thing? Like, hey, we're not fucking around over here.
What if Levitt's on the other side, dude?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but Indra doesn't give a shit about that.
We do.
I know. I'm just saying, bro.
I just want to say that I don't love the visuals through watching Shade Hayda through the helmet. I don't like it. It seems cornball to me. And I'm like, he also has this like manic smile where I'm like, okay, something's wrong. Like, he's just like,
yeah, the subtitles were just Shade Hayda's breathing. I'm like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah.
We can hear the breathing. So can Clark and Octavia, not Bellamy. R.I.P.
Oh, damn.
Damn.
So that will bring us to our next scene in the rec room, kind of cutting from scene to scene. We have Jordan, Gabriel, Hope, and Maddie walks in on Gabriel just straight tickling those ivories, man. He is killing it on the piano. Maddie walks in and says, ooh, I love this song. Hope and Jordan are dancing. That's really nice.
Yeah. Nyla's hammered.
Nyla's fucked up.
She pukes and leaves.
The party's over.
Yeah. So
her walk is just so good.
Yeah.
She acts drunk so well.
She really
does.
It's
so convincing.
It's just, I always have to commend like when Lindsay Morgan directed, when Jessica did, because Nyla's usually not really in these episodes, but she was in it more than usual in this.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because you have to jump in front of the camera and direct yourself. I can't even imagine how hard that is. Directing in itself is impossible. But being
I never even think of being an actor as like an actual job because I just watch them, the finished product, but there's so much work that I don't even think of. Her like directing and jumping onto the scene, like I never even thought that was a thing. So
yeah, and normally you're just an actor, you're quote unquote, it's the hardest job, I'm sure, but it's like you're the talent. People say, get on your mark, you're doing this, this, and that, and they tell you. But if you're the one directing, you're like, fuck, well, how do I want to visualize this? How do I want to whatever? Which is why it's so funny when she's like, did I give myself this close up? Yeah, I did. Like, it's good. It's perfect.
So while they're dancing, though, Hope and Jordan, Hope kind of, like, they look at each other, make eye contact, and smile, and then Hope kind of, like, catches herself and then quickly walks away. Like, she gets upset out of nowhere. Jordan's like, what the hell just happened? Looks at Gabriel. Gabriel's like, this is the part where you go after her, mi hermano.
Mi hermano.
Gabriel had a great episode.
He really did.
There ain't no H in that shit. It's hermano.
Yeah, I didn't take Spanish. I took German.
They did. They really did. Yeah. And I know Kyle will have a lot to say when we get to Gabriel's stuff, but they really gave Gabriel this like sweet episode that shows his like kind side. He's so wise. He really is. Like, it's not even like he gave too much advice or anything, but he's just like, I've been here for so long. I just love him so much. I can't believe he infiltrated my heart this way.
Gabriel's one of my faves.
Me too.
Yeah, he's such a well-written character.
Mm-hmm. So Gabriel offers to teach Maddie the piano, and that's when we go to the scene with Nyla and Echo. Nyla is blackout drunk. Echo had previously said that she was tired, wanted to go to bed, and Nyla's just like, why are you still up, Echo? She's drunk.
Yeah, I didn't know I wanted this Nyla backstory, and I said when we were watching, but there's been times before where I'm like, why would they make Queen Naya and Nyla's name so similar? That is annoying. And I love the story that she's named after her, and that they had to hide in the woods. Like, Nyla really was tucked away in the woods in that little shop because of her mother's scars, whatever. I just like loved that backstory, because you might as well give her a backstory. You kept her around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I had written down, like, it's kind of a pointless revelation, but it really ties the scene together and makes it like a really nice moment.
So the reason that Nyla shares her story is because Echo opens up and is kind of teary-eyed, reminiscing about Bellamy, and says, my name's not Echo, it's Ash. I spent 6 years with Bellamy on the space station, and I never once told him that my real name was Ash, and now I'll never get to. Like, I was a coward this whole time. And Nyla just comforts her and says, you know, he wouldn't have stayed with you this long if he really couldn't see the real you. Like, he loved you, Echo. Don't put these thoughts in your head. It was a good heart-to-heart between two girls that I didn't think were going to get a heart-to-heart with each other.
I agree. I really liked it
because they're best friends in real life, so that just makes me happy.
Oh, yeah.
Are they?
Oh, boy, are they.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that.
That was probably fun.
This cast is very close.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, take away some of the big guys, I think, but the rest of the cast, they are BFFs.
We love it. I mean, it comes off on the screen. So
here on the podcast, we love friendship.
I freaking love you guys.
Oh, I love you, Kyle.
Love you too, Kyle.
Yeah, good shit.
Kyle.
But while we're talking about how awesome Jessica Harmon is, and like we've been saying, she acts drunk really well. The bottle handoff was pristine. Yeah. It was so perfectly done. Like, drunk person, like, here, take this shit. Yeah.
You need it.
It was good.
Good on that scene, Echo and Nyla.
Yeah, let's go to the big three.
Moving on, Raven, Amori, and Murphy. The big three, yeah, for sure. And they're working on the helmet in the workshop. Raven says, Hero Murphy is kind of freaking me out. And Amori's like, I know, but it's kind of hot.
It is hot.
It is.
It is.
Sexy is what it is.
Because he's like rushing Raven to like fix the helmet.
Raven goes, miracles take time. I love that delivery from Lindsay Morgan. It's so funny. Just like, where did she get those like really high tech glasses? Even though I know she said there's a workshop, but still, she like flips those high tech glasses up. She goes, miracles take time.
And it's just funny because that's a total callback to every time she's ever working on anything and they're trying to like hurry her up or ask her how she's doing it. And she always has a quick one liner being like, I'm the shit. I know what I'm doing. Love her.
Boy, does she.
And it gets cut off by Hope crying in the hallway.
Yes. And Murphy goes out to comfort her. Really loved this scene, too.
This is great.
He just walks up, says, hey, I don't think we've ever met. And she cuts him off, says, John Murphy, I've heard stories of you. He says, I tend to play pretty well in stories. She said, not the ones I've heard.
Yeah.
She said, oh, those stories. Enter Jordan. And he just says, hey, I got this, Murphy.
Hey.
Murphy responds, I was his favorite, though. So,
right,
ain't that right, Jordan? And then he's out of there.
That's such a good scene, man.
It's so good.
Yeah, it is.
And it's so unbelievable. Like, you're watching this season, and it's just so hard to realize that Hope and Murphy never really met.
Yep.
Because you're with Murphy and Hope the whole time for 16 episodes or 14 so far. And you're like, holy shit, they never did meet.
I have found great joy in Maddie, Hope, and Jordan all being new, all being told stories by their parental figures about our crew, binge crew, and how each one of them have picked favorites. And when they do get reunited, and Hope's been able to pinpoint every single person by their looks, like without even them saying their names. And I've found great joy in that. So this interaction with just being like, all right, fine, but like, I was Jordan's favorite. Mm-hmm.
I forget. So did Hope and Maddie at one point say who their favorites were from the stories?
So Maddie liked Octavia the best.
Right.
Jordan liked Murphy the best, but we've talked before this. So when they were in the Jeep, when the people from the ring first get down, Maddie throws like big shade at Murphy. Like, I thought you'd be funnier.
That's like my favorite Maddie line.
Yeah, it's great. Maddie in Five was great. She was such a badass. She could kick ass in Five, and now all of a sudden she doesn't know how to fight at all.
So after Murphy has left, though, we have Hope and Jordan left alone. Hope says that she was having a lot of fun dancing with him, but then she was overcome with this feeling of guilt just from losing her mother, a lot of emotions. And Jordan is like one of the only people in the hundred world that can really empathize with her of the guilt involved with losing a parent. And then Hope wants to dance again. Jordan comforted her and they get up, and then they are interrupted by Octavia and Clark, who roll up in a big hurry.
I tweeted cockblock Clark, man.
She just sucks.
Nice. Jordan and Hope are awkward little cuties. Like, just they don't know anything about any. I mean, Jordan got it in with Delilah, but Hope doesn't. Know. Hope took her first sip of alcohol today, presumably. Yeah. Like, who knows? I mean, she might have had some Joe Juice on Sanctum. Who's to say? Oh no, wait, were they? They weren't even on Sanctum.
Yeah, shit.
She probably took that sip and was like, "This is poison."
Yeah,
this is literal poison. But yeah,
well, it is.
Yep.
Jordan has really come into his own as a member of the squad. You know, he's kind of fallen into a nice little role.
I am so glad that I did not crucify him the way that the other people of this podcast did in the early goings, because yes, I 100% like Jordan now. He is good.
I agree.
Yeah, he used to suck though.
Yeah, he was doing sucky things.
He used to be okay.
He was just the guy who they gave cheesy lines and didn't have anything to do until he actually finally had that situation in Bardo when he figured out last war versus last test.
Looks like I'm bringing him more than his morning coffee.
I forgot about that one. That one was horrible. Anyway, Octavia and Clark roll up, so we have all of these people together in the workshop room, I guess. And Russ Hayda is in their midst, like just listening to their conversation. Hope says, "Maddie's in the rec room. I'm 100% sure. Like, you should go there." Right when he hears that, Russ pushes, I think it was Octavia, into the room and locks them all in this workshop. So Russ is let loose with an invisibility suit and the motivation to take out Maddie. She's in trouble.
She's in trouble.
I know it's like, it's a plot device that it has to happen, that the workshop door locks from the outside. But like, what kind of workshop would lock from the outside?
Yeah.
Not a real workshop, Kyle. That's workshop.
Like what? Like, oh, we got to keep these kids away from these tools. Let's leave the lock on the outside of the door.
Yeah. Well,
whatever.
Which brings us to Gabriel and Maddie alone in the rec room, tickling the ivories once again. Gabriel's like teaching her how to play. Gabriel would make a great father. I was wow, Gabriel, you are just killing it, my man.
That's why his faction is called the Children of Gabriel.
Wow. Ooh. Kathleen's whipping out her third eye on this one, just seeing things none of us are seeing. So, and then Russ immediately stabs Gabriel and we go right to commercial, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was fucked.
Cut. I gasped. I was like,
yeah, no, I did too. I said no out loud. I really did.
That's when I texted the group and said, who's watching right now?
Yeah.
Last night at midnight. Yeah. I was like, who's watching?
I've been so upset I haven't been able to watch these live. That has been crushing me.
I'm going to say, we cut from commercial and Maddie is like backing up being like, what the fuck? Gabriel's on the ground now, knife to the chest from the back. Maddie getting beat up by Shade Hayda, invisible Shade Hayda, is kind of cool. Like, it's a good scene. I was like, I want to see this get filmed. Like, did they green screen it? Did they like, how did they do that?
Just someone getting beat up by an invisible person?
I thought it was so well done. It didn't look like she was being dragged around by like harnesses or anything. It looked legit. I was like, she must be. I don't know how they did it.
How about this? We'll get Jessica Harmon on the pod and we'll ask her.
I will send her that clip and see what she says.
So, Russell, I have a long quote here. Russell just says, he reveals himself to Maddie eventually and he says, "Hello, Maddie. It appears you're the key to the transcendence of the human race. They sent me to bring you back, but you see, I don't want to transcend. I want to reign. They gave me a choice. Use this to bring you back peacefully." And he whips out the vial of pills that teleport people, and we already covered how bullshit that is. "Or this, if you wouldn't come willingly." And he just whips out a knife. And then he says, "I prefer option 3, to gut you like a pig." And then our boy Gabriel saves the day. And with his last breath, well, not his last breath, but he tackles Russ Hayda to the floor and says, Maddie, like, go to Indra and Guy at the rotunda. Maddie gets out of there.
And then he proceeds to get stuck like a pig.
Yeah, he does.
I just want to say that, I guess, give props to, I believe, Jimmy. Jimmy was the first one on the pod to utter the words that Maddie essentially was going to be the key and all that kind of stuff. So, whatever, Jim.
Yeah, give me that dub for once.
Yeah. And the whole Earth being the ending. I feel like we were pretty on point with all that stuff.
Yeah.
Jimmy Paul's made of L's. Give him this dub.
Yeah, please give him one dub.
Just kidding.
I was initially shocked that Gabriel was still able to move and such, but I'm glad that he kind of had a heroic stand right there.
He does live for a while after being stabbed a lot, but...
Yeah, we'll move on to... Gabe gets more dead than he was before. And then we move on to this fight with which, the first fight we get with Indra and Shade Hate. Again, we had that like kind of wacky directing that I said I liked. This time around, we got more wacky directing where they like to linger on Maddie. And I'm like, okay, this time I want to see it. Like the first time I was like, I liked how wacky it was. This time I'm like, enough. Let me just see the choreography. Like I want to see both. Because with Indra and Gaia and Shade Hate, I'm like, let me see this like intricate three-person choreography. I would love that.
It was still pretty cool looking, I think.
Very
it was well done.
Cool, but
the
I
only
want
grievance
more.
I have is they showed one scene where Indra had her like sword cocked and ready to swing at Russell's like bare back, and then they just switched it to a scene where like she kicked him in his side instead of like
slicing him.
So you think they just like cut it up where it wasn't exactly?
Yeah, and
the,
I just hate
sequence.
That they showed that little bit where like she had an open shot to kill him, and then they just made her not. And I count that as like the fourth time this season where she should have been able to kill Russ and didn't.
I mean,
and then a fifth comes up next.
I literally tweeted, this is Indra's fault for not killing J.R. Bourne when she had the chance twice. She literally had him just sitting there ready to die twice.
She just
placed it adorn.
Yeah, for whatever reason, she needs to say it before she kills him, and it never ends up coming to fruition. I could have used about 5-10 more minutes of that fight.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I would have liked it to be longer if we knew he was going to die, but he didn't.
Yeah. So,
okay, good point.
To Indra and Gaia win the fight, technically, I would say. They get Russ de-weaponed and on his back on the ground, but he escapes by stabbing himself with, what do we refer to that as? Just like
tracker
a tracker, knife, whatever.
Oh, tag them, yeah. How dope is that?
It's a good one. Yeah, it's a good escape because he looks her in the eyes and just says, not this time, and then he's just out, and so, Indra is pissed.
Yeah, so let me ask you guys, I want a little sidebar here. What is your opinion on the fact that we know now that Shade Hate has got to be part of the end game, and he's survived imminent death like 3 or 4 times? Are you good with him still being around? What's the deal now?
No, and I think on every instance where Indra should have killed him, we have voiced our grievances. So yeah. I don't want to get too much into it because I'm willing to overlook it because I'm so happy that the character of Russ Hayda is still around.
Yeah.
So I'm cool with it. Yeah. I always wanted Russ Hayda to be endgame, and it looks like he's going to be involved.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I want to say, because I know we beat a dead horse about how we love J.R. Bourne, but the thing is, we talked about how bad Shade Hayda was in season 6. I really hope they decide to make Shade Hayda endgame because of how good J.R. Bourne was. Because imagine if they cast Shade Hayda to be somebody not J.R. Bourne. And we like Shade Hayda because of J.R. Bourne. Can you imagine if it's like another actor and he's not that good? And now we're like, you sucked in season 6. We don't care about your backstory. Now you're not even that great. And there's not really a reason to make him endgame.
The season 6 you're referencing is the actual Shade Hayda, like with the scars and stuff.
Before he's Russell, you know, before he's J.R. Bourne.
That hypothetical scenario would have ruined the season.
I mean, that was our biggest grievance to start in the preview. We do not want Shade Hayda to be part of this. But then we changed it like crazy when we found out how J.R. Bourne portrayed him.
One little quote that how they open this scene, I just love when Shade Hayda comes out of the shadows basically and Indra's like, you. And then he goes, me. Us. I was like, yeah, let's go, bro.
Shindra.
Yeah, Shindra. Shadra.
What?
That's their ship name.
Shadra.
Memori is Endgame told us what it was on our Instagram today.
Ooh, okay, I trust her.
At Memori is Endgame. What is it? Shadra.
I like Shadra.
Works for me.
Either way.
I don't ship them. I want fucking Indra to kill his ass.
Yeah, I totally ship
I need
them.
A knife in the throat. Like, big time.
Fair enough. Either way, we...
Nah, that's too quick.
We go back to the workshop, and our boy Murphy breaks the gang out of the workshop. After someone says, that's unbreakable glass, dude. You're
Clark
never going to be
course.
Able to break
yeah.
it. Why did they make her say that?
That's just so stupid.
Pissed off enough.
Just let him break it.
And it was how would she even know? Like, damn, Clark really sucked this episode, didn't she?
She really
oh,
did.
Big suck.
Whatever. Okay, we're going to
first
keep...
time I thought she big sucked. Yeah.
Anyway, Murphy breaks them out, and that brings us back to the rotund. Actually, no, they go to the rec room to find Gabriel bleeding out.
Right. He's still dying.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is still dying.
Time dilation, man.
He better stop.
So Gabriel tells them that Russ Hayda left his helmet, but that it's damaged, and...
I loved Hope rushing to him because I'm like, yeah. Hope's got about five people and three of them are already dead. So.
And I love how he says, my friend,
oh,
when she shows up.
Sweet, yeah. Like sugar. Yeah. My God.
Isn't Fuck. It though?
Hope, damn. My friend.
No, I just wanted to say that we talked about this earlier, but this scene is obviously like so sad. Everyone's freaking out. And then Miller and Jackson roll in post-coital and Miller just goes, what did we miss? It's like, bro, you missed so much important shit.
Post-coital. Love it.
Yeah. So yeah, Gabriel, do you got it?
I don't have it written, but I'll say it from heart because I love it. In peace. May we leave the shore. In love, may we find the next. Safe passage on your travels until our final journey to the ground. May we meet again.
May we meet again.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that in the moment, I cared more about Gabriel dying than Bellamy dying.
100%. Yep. I was going to
100%.
And that is ridiculous. And I just want to leave it at that.
Yep. That's it. That's all I need to say.
That's what I want to leave it at.
Death is life. Kyle,
so,
hit it.
Yeah.
So we've heard this from Gabriel before. And we've actually heard it from, I believe this is that Nelson's last words might be La muerte es la vida as well.
Yep.
So La muerte es la vida is death is life. This is the title of a poem written by a man whose name is Gabriel Alvarez de Toledo. So essentially the poem La muerte es la vida is about the fact that God gave man a soul to live in a mortal body. And this mortal body is seen as a barrier or a chain that holds the soul down to earth and keeping it from its true purpose, which is once again becoming one with God. So that's basically Gabriel's whole thing, is that he's finally ready to die and give up these mortal bodies that he's been switching out on and on and on and on. I haven't taken an English class in like 7 years, so that's the general gist I got from the poem. So this man in real life, Gabriel Alvarez, was a noble-born man from the 17th century in Spain who has studied philosophy, linguistics, and religion. So people say that he had two super distinct parts of his life, one that was like super profane, where he was basically, you know, into debauchery, a delinquent, and then another where he became super pious and religious, which is a little bit similar to Gabriel, where he had the period of his life where he tried to conquer death and use all those test subjects to bring Josephine back, and then kind of found a new light as... you know, the leader of the Children of Gabriel. This man was the founder of, or one of the founders rather, of the Royal Spanish Academy, and was the first senior librarian of the Royal Library of Spain. So this man knew his way around a book, just like our boy Gabriel. And he was a member of a religious and military force known as the Knights of Santiago. So,
crazy.
Damn.
Yes.
That is awesome. Holy shit, Kyle. Yes. Thank you for bringing that to
us. I guess another little parallel is that the Knights of Santiago is a religious and military order, like I said, but it can only be joined by noble birth. So it's kind of similar to the Prime family, where like you need to have the lineage to get in the club, basically.
Like oblation and shit. Wow.
Yeah.
Good shit.
Good shit. I mean, Gabriel was amazing. He was such a well-written character. And just him saying La muerte es la vida at the end was like, why does he keep, like, obviously he's Spanish and that means something. So I started Googling it, fell down a rabbit hole, and I was like, this is the man they wrote this character about.
I am so glad that you told us about that right now. That is so cool. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, right? I like that too.
Thanks,
good
Kyle.
Stuff. Love you, Gabriel. May we meet again, brother.
One last thing is that Gabriel gave them the last little nugget of hope saying, we got Shade's helmet. Shade Hayda's helmet. That still works. So they can, can fix that, but they know that the stone is near. It's not as fucked up as the other helmet.
Yeah. So Maddie, meanwhile, who was in the room, observed these pills and is kind of starting to say she doesn't want anybody else dying to protect her. And then while Gabriel is dying, essentially, she slips away through the vents and the pills are missing. So that brings us to Clark and everybody essentially going to the rotunda to this standoff between Maddie, Gaia, and Indra, where Maddie is about to stab herself with the tracker, obviously to give herself up to Bardo. Mm-hmm. And Gaia and Indra are just kind of, you know, with their hands up. And Gaia looks at Clark and says, I didn't know what her intentions were when she first came in. And everybody's just kind of on edge right now because Maddie's about to commit harikari and give herself to the Bardoans. And that's not a fate that anybody wants for her.
Yeah. And the one thing we want to backtrack to is that Clark took the pills from Maddie, like threatening her, saying you're not going to do that.
Yes, yeah. Yes,
so that's why she needed to use the tag or the track or whatever it's called. But yeah, she got what she wanted. I mean, again, just like season five, Maddie's saying, you know, I'm going to take care of this.
Here's my thing.
No one's dying for me.
Maddie is my note is Maddie is really fucking dumb. What's the point of any of this? But I don't actually believe that. So Clark is the really fucking dumb one here. Clark sacrificed Bellamy. Now Gabriel's dead. And for what? Maddie just went and fucking is an MCAP anyway. Like, all this stuff is happening. And I kind of agree with Maddie where it's like, no one else is going to die for me. Like, you have to live with killing your best friend and possibly the love of your life, besides Lexa, of course. For me, like, Maddie gets it. Maddie's us. Maddie's like, don't fuck the world up for me. I'm not worth this. Like,
what about Finn? She loved Finn.
Like, that's one of those things where it's like, she's deciding to kill Finn as a mercy kill. Compare this Finn and Bellamy death. Jesus fuck. And Raven's like, I'm going to fuck you up, basically, to Clark. And now that she killed Bellamy, they're all like, it's fine.
It's all good. I forgive you.
Finn, like, opened fire on fucking 20 innocent people. And
yeah, that's so true.
With Maddie now giving herself up to Bill and the disciples on Bardo, it just, like, just spit in our face about Bellamy's death, that how fucking pointless it was. Like, her not getting the sketchbook was already pointless enough, and now this is just like, come on, man. It hurts.
It really does hurt. And, like, moving on, I want the video of the other side of Bill being like, okay, where's the bomb? Okay, we're going to throw the bomb through the anomaly right now. Like, it's so stupid. It's like, a bomb!
Yeah. And they give you seven seconds. Give them a little bit of less seconds if you want to blow it up.
Jimmy goes, why wouldn't they send the bomb over when it only had one or two seconds left? So they didn't have time to get rid of it. I was like, true.
We need the drama. And right here, I swear to God, I thought Miller was going to sacrifice himself.
I agree.
I thought we had the scene earlier with Jackson where he's like, you know, I never forgave Bellamy for what, you know, he did and all this stuff. He forgave me for all that I've done, but I don't think my father would have. And I thought that this was going to be the moment where it's like, he already has Bellamy's forgiveness. Now he sacrifices himself for everybody else and gets his father's forgiveness. And the story comes full circle. And then it didn't happen.
Honestly, that would have been a great way to finish off Miller as a character on the show. But I'm kind of glad that instead he just handled it like a boss, saw the bomb, put it in the room, got the hell out of there, and he was able to live, which
I'm glad it was him because he was in the bunker for 6 years prior, so he would know which room to throw it in. If it was me, I'd be like, try to eat it really quick.
Miller, though, he was not even for a second like, he saw the bomb and immediately reacted. He's a soldier. That was completely Miller's time to shine, and I'm glad that they gave it to him.
Get the flock out of here.
Oh, my gosh, bro.
I will say, though, if he dies in the next two episodes and they didn't just give him that cool death, it better be a cooler death than that would have been.
Agreed.
That would have been a cool death, but also, like, stupid. Like, oh, they threw a bomb for 1 second. Yeah. That's not even a plot point. That's just, like, dumb. That bomb is literally for next episode's plot point with Murphy and Amori.
Yeah.
That's literally all it is.
So, point being, Murphy and Amori get smooshed in some rubble, and that's the end of the episode. Cut to black, and I was getting Jaime and Cersei Lannister vibes, but we know from the preview that at least Amori's fine and Murphy's fine. We see them both in the preview, so they'll live through it, I guess. I don't know, but that's the end of our episode.
They're gonna live through it because they wouldn't show it if they would leave it for next episode. There's no way one of them dies.
Yeah,
I refuse to believe it. They're my end game.
Okay, so before Kathleen's big question, I have a question. What do you guys think about two episodes left and we still don't really know if what the war is, what the test is? Like, are we just going to see what happens? Or
I don't think the test slash war is a real thing. I think the show is going to use it to say that, like, cults are dumb, shouldn't follow them, like, and that Bill was an insane person.
Mm-hmm.
How they wrap it up, I think Bill's going to die next episode. I think Bill has to die next episode, but, like, where we go from there, how we get to it, your guess is as good as mine. You know?
So if there's no war, there's no test, is Shade Hated the real end game? Or, like, how do they, like, what is an ending for this?
I can't really identify the main bad guy, because Russ Hayda is now doing the bidding of the disciples, like, going to find Maddie for them. So, like, I can't even identify who our big bad is. I guess I would say Bill at this point.
I think the name is, what, Juan Hayda?
Yeah, heard that. I mean, I honestly, if the test exists, we talked about it a little bit last week. Like, I am now, after even this episode, with the way Clark acted, and I know at certain parts, B-Toms, you said that you took it a different way, but with the way I took it, how she acted, I think that a good ending is going to be that Bellamy was right, like we said last episode, meaning we have two extremes. We have Clark on the extreme where only your friends matter. Only the people you care about matter. No one else matters. Sacrifice everyone else for the people you care about. And then we have Bill, who says, for all mankind, nothing matters until the very end. And Bellamy was the middle of both of them. You know, he was saying, I agree that it is all mankind, but I also agree that we don't sacrifice other people just because of our, you know, do better, finally, right? The only thing that popped in my head last night, and this is probably just major tinfoil bullshit, but like, say they do Judgment Day. Say that we know, like, you were the one who brought this up, E-Toms. Like, we know that has to exist.
I keep going back and forth on it.
It's a problem because the fact that they made Becca do something with the stone and go somewhere, I feel like that has to happen. So my thing would be, like, what if Clark and Bill both go and they both fail?
Okay, so question for you. Next episode, do you think the code that Becca typed in is going to be typed in again? I think it has to be.
I think
they're going to find it from Maddie and MCAP. Right. I think that's what's going to happen. Who do we think's going to go?
Well, that was my thing. Like, I thought if it's end game and there's like an end moral to the story, I was going to say, what if they both go and they're both wrong? And Bellamy was right. Meaning the two extremes are wrong, but Bellamy's right. But then that again is, what, does all mankind, are they destroyed? Like, I don't know.
This is where I don't know either. Like, your guess is as mine, and go ahead.
I really like the point about how both Clark and Bill go in and they represent our extremes and then they're both wrong. I like that, but yeah, I don't see how they can both take the test, fail, and then just get spit back out and everything's chilling.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I feel like it would happen.
So if someone's going to take the test and succeed, it's going to be John fucking Murphy.
I mean, he's really turning into I said it earlier, the main protagonist. Like, he should take the test now.
Does
the
show have the balls to do that?
Here's the thing. I like
it. The final test?
Because in season 6, his storyline was, I don't want to go to hell. And he was so scared. And him being the key to saving the human race is with these chefs motherfucking kiss for me.
I would love it.
I'm in.
I'm just scared because if Becca Franco couldn't pass the test, what chance do any of these schlubs have?
Maybe it's not about smarts.
Yeah, I think Becca Franco's issue is that she had made a mistake and she thought she could learn from it by, like, improving, like, technology and being better that way. But, like, Murphy has made personal growth and has been through so much himself and has, you know, made more conscious decisions to be a better person to, like, even just individuals, not even groups of people. So I think Murphy's got the upper hand there. He's more socially intelligent.
Whether they knew that was, if it ends up being Murphy's end game, like, whether they knew it or not in the beginning, probably not. But the fact that he grew into that is just phenomenal.
The fact that they told, when Richard Harmon had that thing at Comic-Con where at the end of season 1, he wasn't like a full-time guy.
Yep.
And they thought that Jason was going to tell him that he was going to die, but then they gave him, like, hey, you're going to come on full-time and be a big part of the show. Like, what a journey that would be for both Murphy and Richard.
So true. Good.
I'm going to end this with, send Jer Bear in there, dude. Send Jerry in to take the test, man. Jerry is our shining star. Kathleen, take it away.
Okay, we're going to fade right into some Bank Hill Mary. Yeah. We've got some cougars on deck. We've got Dioza, Indra, and Abby.
They're all moms.
MILFs. Okay. I am going to marry Indra because she is the coolest and I love her. And she is tough and strong, but vulnerable, as we can see. I am going to bang Dioza because she is a bad bitch and always has been. And I am going to kill Abby because she was pissing me off. But really, like, there were points in every single season where I'm like, Abby, please, for the love of God.
Okay. So I'm going to kill Abby. One, she was very controlling of Clark and she tried to like be the leader of the human faction, even when like she clearly just was not the leader type. Like, slow your roll. Clark's our girl. And she just kept trying to like not allow her to be what Clark is. So I don't want to be married to that. I don't want to bang that either. And also, I think we can all agree that by season 6, Abby, we were all done for her to be off the show. And if that was her worst season and like season 1-2 were her best seasons, I just watched those two and she still was not that enjoyable of a character in those two seasons. So like, you know what? Killing Abby. Who am I going to bang? It's going to be Dioza. She's crazy. I love Dioza. Yeah. That would just be awesome. And I'm going to marry Indra. She's so wise. And like, look at that scene today with Octavia and Indra. She was just very like, she has grown so much. She used to be like the archetype of a primitive grounder, like, you know, fight first, talk later. And she has grown so much into this wise, like caring person. She's like, showing she can be like a mother figure to her daughter. And it's like, great. I want to be married to that. I'm marrying Indra, banging Dioza, killing Abby.
Oh, man. I feel like we're all the same. Kyle, I hope you have something different.
Kyle loves Abby.
I actually was going to bang Abby and you totally changed my mind. Like, I swear. Because you know what? I'm going to have some tequila with Dioza, just like she did with Kane, and we're banging. Okay. Then I'm marrying Indra for pretty much the same exact reasons you both just said. And Abby, sorry, girl.
So I'm going to marry Indra, obviously. That's the obvious choice there. And then
we're all
gonna
be some hella fighters.
Now, I am 100%, no doubt in my mind, banging Abby. I have the biggest crush on Paige Turco. Paige Turco is an absolute dime piece. She, if you look up MILF in the dictionary, Paige Turco's picture's right there. So I'm in on that. And then Dioza, I'm sorry. I'll kill you.
Good luck killing Dioza. That was my other thing.
I'll add that notch onto my belt.
Dioza. So that's going to conclude our Bang Kill Mary and the podcast episode as a whole. We're going to be continuing to cover the 100 all season long. Next up will be episode 15, The Dying of the Light. If you're looking for more the 100 content in the meantime, make sure to go back and listen to our episodes interviewing Chad Rook, Jason Diaz, and Sachin Sahil. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks.
Love you guys. Listening. Oh, you got me with the pause, bro. Sorry.